where Smucker's natural peanut butter chunky was distributed, include Illinois and Indiana. That's our noon hour look at WILL News. Our next report this afternoon at 4:30 during All Things Considered.
This weather forecast is made possible with support from the University of Illinois Employees Credit Union, a member-owned and not-for-profit organization. Their mission is to serve the complete financial needs of its members. The University of Illinois Employees Credit Union. Information is available on the web at uiecu.org.
High pressure will dominate the weather across the Midwest over the next few days. Cold and dry conditions will be the rule today. Once the high begins to shift to the east, a southerly flow will bring much warmer air back into the region for the end of the week, with high temperatures on Saturday reaching the 60-degree mark in many locations. We'll have a chance of rain Saturday night into Sunday. High temperatures today will range from the upper 20s across northern Wisconsin to the low 50s across southwestern Missouri. Overnight lows will range from the low 20s across northern Wisconsin to the mid-30s across southwestern Missouri. The forecast for East Central Illinois this afternoon, sunny and breezy, the high 43, the wind out of the west at 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts to 30. Tonight, mostly clear, the low 28. The wind will be from the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, sunny and warmer with a high of 52. Another windy day with the wind out of the south at 25 to 30 miles per hour with gusts to 40 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy, the low 37, the wind from the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25 miles per hour. Saturday, mostly cloudy and breezy, look for a high of 55, the wind out of the south from 20 to 25 miles per hour. Saturday night, cloudy with a chance of showers and a low in the mid-40s. Sunday, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and a high in the low 50s. Sunday night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and a low in the upper 30s. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the mid-30s to the mid-40s. Most locations reporting sunshine. At Rockford, 33 degrees. It was 34 at O'Hare. Bloomington reported 39 degrees, 41 at Mattoon, 45 at Carbondale. At South Bend, 34 degrees. In Lafayette, it was 38 degrees. Indianapolis reported 40 degrees at the top of the hour. Terre Haute, 42. Evansville, 45. Willard Airport reported a sunny sky at the top of the hour, 39 degrees. The dew point, 16. The relative humidity, 39%. The wind out of the west at 24 miles per hour with gusts to 30. And the barometric pressure, 30.28, and steady. And at 12:40, 39 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. Walmart is moving into the nation's capital. Walmart says it will open 6 stores in Washington, D.C. It's a coup for the retailer and for the city's mayor. Patrick Madden from member station WAMU has more.
While some communities have fought to keep Walmart out, D.C. officials have welcomed the retailer with open arms. Most of the stores will be built in underserved neighborhoods, and city leaders say the promise of hundreds of jobs and access to fresh groceries overrode concerns about Walmart possibly driving down wages or driving out small businesses. Walmart spokesperson Steven Restivo says the company is targeting neighborhoods with few retail options.
There are large pockets of underserved communities, in some cases even food deserts, where people just don't have choices. We feel like our stores can be part of the solution again.
But community activists like Diana Forrester complain city leaders should have pressed Walmart for concessions on starting salaries and other benefits before announcing the deal.
When you make negotiations behind closed doors and then you say you're building 6 Walmarts and we want to know where the community engagement is, the community's not being involved in the process.
Washington Mayor Vincent Gray says the city is working on a community benefits agreement with Walmart. For NPR News, I'm Patrick Madden in Washington.
College graduates face one of the bleakest job markets on record. It's so hard to find work that some grads are resorting to unconventional approaches. Sarah Cavedo of TurnstileNews.com met an aspiring accountant who spent 6 months emailing resumes before trying something more daring.
Alexander Monsanto has achieved a lot of firsts. He's a first-generation American, the first in his family to graduate high school, and the first to get a college degree. All eyes are on him to succeed, but it's been 10 months since he got his accounting degree from Florida Atlantic University, and still no job.
There are times where I would question what I was doing. I studied accounting for 4 years. If it's going to be this difficult to get a job, is this a field that I want to be in?
One morning, he says, he responded to every Craigslist ad in the San Francisco Bay Area that mentioned accounting and didn't receive a single response.
It turns into like this vicious cycle where it's not helping to stay home to look for a job. You kind of have to just get out of the house and go and network, put yourself out there. I needed to find something different.
It's 7:45 in the morning, and the lanky 25-year-old boards a commuter bus to San Francisco, holding a sandwich board with the words, "Hire Me," spelled out on the front with big black sticky letters. Monsanto steps off the bus, pulls the straps over his shoulders, and begins walking the streets of the financial district. His "Hire Me" sign beats against his chest with every step. It's a moment that he says fills him with embarrassment every time.
Whatever it takes, that's what I keep telling myself. I mean, a lot of people probably think I'm crazy, but I'm not.
Not crazy at all, because it actually works. Monsanto says he gets twice as many interviews with his sandwich board, 3 to 4 per week. At one point, Kim Tobias passes by. It turns out she's a corporate recruiter who wants a resume.
I think it's, you know, a little wacky, but I think that it would work. Shows me that he's really interested in finding a job. He's got initiative. That's even better than LinkedIn.
A few blocks later, a woman calls out to him, "Hey, you in the sandwich board." Janet Myers works at the University of California, and she has a tip for him.
Check out the UC website. They're looking for, like, a bunch of accounting clerks to do part
really?
Of the grant process. Yeah.
The University of California?
Yes.
Can I use you as a referral?
Sure.
All right. UC.
While he scribbles down the job details, Eric Schroeder, a senior VP at the insurance giant Aon, pulls out his phone and snaps a picture, promising to post it on his LinkedIn profile.
Here's my card.
Do you want a copy of my resume?
Please.
Yeah, all right. Here you go.
I'm going to post it on LinkedIn and just say, "Here's an enterprising young man."
One of Monsanto's favorite stories is about the day he met his potentially perfect match. Representatives from the solar company Sunrun were on the same street corner in downtown San Francisco, wearing T-shirts with the advertisement, "We're hiring." Susan Wise, a PR manager at Sunrun, was stoked about the chance encounter.
Here they were proactively seeking job seekers, and they bumped into this guy who was doing his own little guerrilla marketing thing for seeking a job.
Monsanto followed up with a resume and even landed an interview, but no job.
I think what happened was just the opportunities we had listed weren't really a fit for his background. But I think it's a good example of how the concept of a mutual fit is tremendously important.
With so many mid-career job seekers competing for the same positions, it's hard for newcomers like Monsanto to be that perfect fit employers are looking for. So forced to face the reality of paying bills, Alexander Monsanto has put his dreams of a full-time accounting job on hold. Instead, he's willing to accept a part-time or even temporary job as an accountant. And in the meantime, he keeps beating the streets in his sandwich board.
You know anyone who needs an accountant?
No.
Yeah.
Creative idea, though.
Yeah.
For NPR News, I'm Sarah Quevedo.
The National Book Award winners were announced yesterday in New York. Stephen Greenblatt's The Swerve, a dramatic account of the Renaissance-era rediscovery of the Latin poet Lucretius, won for nonfiction. Salvage the Bones, set in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina by Jesmyn Ward, won for fiction. The awards have long been criticized for being insular, too prone for nominations of little-known writers. But that didn't seem to matter to the winners of this year's awards, NPR's Lynn Neary reports.
Whether a first-time novelist like Taya Obrett or a veteran writer like Edith Perlman, the National Book Award nominees were universally thrilled to see their work validated by their peers. Gary Schmidt, nominated in the Young People's Literature category, said what makes the nomination so special is that it's awarded by other writers.
That means the world to me, that other writers who are so wonderful at their craft think that this is worthy of recognition. How cool is that?
Usually the winners of the fiction and nonfiction awards get the most attention, but this year a couple of poets stole the show. First, the poet John Ashbery was given the award for distinguished contribution to American letters. In a wry, funny acceptance speech, he acknowledged that some people find his poetry hard to understand. When he began writing poetry, Ashbery said, he thought he was simply carrying on in the tradition of great modern artists like Picasso and Stravinsky.
It was okay for those godlike figures to traffic in difficulty, but my own stuff was just a little too difficult. In fact, a lot too difficult, ranking somewhere near root canal on the pleasure principle scale.
But Ashbery went on to say poetry should be difficult in the way reading is difficult. They are both pleasurable and painful, he said, because they can change a person. In a powerful and emotional speech accepting the award for poetry, Nikki Finney reminded the audience just how much a person can be changed by reading when she invoked the spirit of slaves who had been forbidden to read.
Tonight, these forbidden ones move around the room as they please. They sit at whatever table they want, wear camel-colored field hats and tomato-red kerchiefs. They are bold in their Sunday go-to-meeting best. Their cotton croaker sack shirts are black washpot clean and irreverently not tucked in. Some have even come in white Victorian collars and bustiers. Some have just climbed out of the cold, wet Atlantic just to be here. We shiver together.
One of the poems that won Finney her award was about Hurricane Katrina, and the winner of the fiction award, Salvage the Bones by Jesmyn Ward, was also about the devastating effects of that terrible storm. Ward read an excerpt from her book at an event the night before the award ceremony.
"Daddy," I say, and I'm surprised at how clear my voice is, how solid, how sure, like a hand that can be held in the dark. "Water's in the attic." The water is faster this time. It wraps liquid fingers around my toes, my ankles, begins creeping up my calves. This is a fast seduction. The wind howls.
In the category of literature for young people, Teng Ha Lai won the prize for Inside Out and Back Again, the story of a young Vietnamese girl learning to adjust to a new life in Alabama. And the award for nonfiction went to Stephen Greenblatt's The Swerve, the story of the rediscovery of an ancient poem and the effect that had on Western culture. One last award for outstanding service to the American literary community went to well-known bookseller Mitchell Kaplan, one of the founders of the influential Miami Book Fair. Traditional bookstores are struggling to survive in the digital age, says Kaplan, but he believes the future is still bright.
I firmly believe that even with all the upheaval we find in our industry today, there's room for plenty of optimism. Writers are writing marvelous and important books. Publishers are publishing them. And as every bookseller knows, readers want to know about them and they want to buy them.
The bookstore, said Kaplan, is the link between writer and reader.